Chapter 9. Anthropophagite. Polixis. The beast left Polixis to struggle for much of the day, the corpses of his battle brothers laid out before him. Only with the onset of night did it summon more of its minions, among them a clanking greenskin that seemed to be composed of crude rusting bionics more than green flesh. The thing was lugging a heavy industrial saw in its wake, and attended by a train of hook-nosed Gretchen hefting spanners and other work tools.
"This is my big mech," Urgork said to Polixis.
He'd witnessed the warlord take 3 injections from its Medicaid throughout the day, each time apparently reliant on the foul concoction to arrest the seizures that would intermittently grip it. A part of the apothecary felt a morbid sense of fascination towards the unnatural alien and his apparently numerous afflictions. There was no medical precedent for the existence of such a freak experiment, and yet here it was, seemingly kept alive as much by its own schizophrenic willpower as by the dark potions of its creator.
"Cogcrusher here likes all your beaky gubbins," Urgork was saying,
indicating to the greenskin mechanic that was peering at Polixis from behind grubby bionic lenses.
"All them armor bits and daca, and especially your big truck. Told him he can tinker with it all he wants, once I've got you helping me."
Polixis swallowed his retort, knowing it was pointless. The idea that the Xenos wanted to experiment on such blessed armor was as sickening as the thought of them defiling the flesh of the dead Primaris. Urgork waved the thing he'd addressed as Cogcrusher over to the remains of Demeter, Skyrus, and Squad Tyro. The thing's Gretchen slaves scurried and scampered over the fallen Primaris, grimy little hands tugging at armor plates and helmets, squabbling among themselves. Urgork seemed to grow impatient as his mechanic prevaricated over the bodies, apparently overwhelmed by the choices on display.
"Cogcrusher!"
the warlord barked, singling out the body of one of the aggressors, Brother Uxis, with a claw.
"Cut that git open!"
The mechanic hefted its heavy saw, its augmented limbs grating, and the basilica filled with an ear-splitting scream as the wicked blade seared into Brother Uxis's gravis armor. Polixis gritted his teeth so hard that the metallic tang of blood filled his mouth, trying not to think about the brutal defilement of the hallowed battleplate. Trying not to think about what the greenskins were going to do when they finally cracked it open. Fat sparks burst across the flagstones, ceramite, then plasteel, then adamantium giving way with a slow, grim reluctance. It took long minutes to break the will of the gravis plate. The Gretchen scurried about the feet of their mechanical master, tugging away the scraps of twisted blue metal hacked apart by the saw's relentless work. Eventually, Uxis was reduced to his under-armor and black carapace, the greenskins tugging away dermal nodes and connector ports with gleeful, savage abandon. The ultramarine's dead flesh was left exposed, his breastplate cleft in half, his helmet dragged off, his heraldry split and defiled.
"That's enough,"
Urgork snapped, pointing once more at the body.
"Bring it over here."
A trio of orcs dragged the heavy corpse and what little remained of its armor before Polixis's rack, grating it over the flagstones. The apothecary found himself looking down into Uxis's dead eyes. Even in death, the slain aggressor appeared stoic, jaw set, expression unwavering. He looked away.
"Squeamish, is ya?"
Urgork demanded, planting a boot on Uxis's torso. The orc's hobnails dug into the pale flesh of the ultramarine's chest. Polixis met the thing's gaze, his eyes burning.
"That's more like it," Urgork snarled. "That's the face of a proper Yumi git looking for a scrap. Never understood why yous get so angry sometimes. Us lads just want a good fight. No point getting all worked up about it. Still, here we is. Doc, get over here!"
The orc Medicaid scampered to its master's side. It was grinning up at Polixis in its leering manner, clearly delighting in what was about to take place. Polixis felt his anger mount as he began to realize what was happening.
"You is about to witness a medical first,"
Urgulk said proudly, planting his bald fists on his hips.
"Doc Grok here is about to perform the first ever removative surgery on a Humi Beaky in front of another Humi Beaky. Doc, we await your pleasure."
The warlord took his boot off Uxis and stepped away. The Medicaid crouched over the corpse like some sort of hideous carrion creature. After a brief inspection, it laid out a leather strip on the floor, scattered with various rusting blades. The vile parody of the surgeon's fine art turned Polixis's stomach, and he found himself straining once more at his bonds. The servos shuddered slightly, grating, but going no further. None of the greenskins seemed to notice. They were all staring with bated excitement at their hunched-over pain boy. The orc's fingers moved over the instruments of its supposed profession, apparently pondering which one it wanted to employ first. Eventually, it snatched up what appeared to be a small, rusting power saw. The buzz of the cutting tool, like a miniature version of the industrial rotor used by the orc mechanic, filled Polixis's ears.
"Stop!"
He realized he had barked the word involuntarily. The green-skinned medike looked up, clearly startled, saw still in its hand. Urgulk emitted a hacking laugh that devolved into another bout of coughing. He inhaled noisily and spat before his grin returned.
"Can't stop the march of science, beaky boy. The good doc here has been itching to carve up these gubbins for days now. Wouldn't be right or proper for him or his patients to cancel the operation now. It'd take something big to do that. Say, maybe," he paused, "you giving me what I want. Tell me your secrets, Beaky. Tell me how I can be free of all this."
The orc jabbed his claw in the direction of the Medicaid syringe satchel. Polixis stayed silent. Inwardly, he was snarling a string of enraged blasphemies that would have risked a blow from Castor. He damned himself for his own weakness, damned himself for being drawn by Urgork's defilement. Brother Uxis would not have wanted him to yield, no matter what cruelties were heaped on his corpse. He would not converse with the Xenos, would not justify its existence, even with words of hatred.
"Lost your tongue again?"
Urgulk grunted, looking disappointed.
"Fine, then. Have it your way." "Grok!"
The smaller greenskin's expression was the opposite of its master's. Smiling manically, it raised its saw blade.
"Gonna need this to chop through that thick bone stuff,"
the Xenos said, its tone full of relish. It cranked the saw to maximum output and pressed it down against Uxis's bare chest. For a second, the flesh of the Primaris resisted. Then it gave way beneath the buzzing blade, and blood, dark with age, splattered along the saw's edge, hitting the orc's face and stained overalls. The alien licked the blood from its lips, grinning wickedly, but its joyous expression turned to a strained rictus as it put all of its scrawny strength behind the cutting tool, pressing down as it sought to split the Primaris's toughened rib bone. There was a hideous, juddering shriek as rusting metal fought through the breastplate beneath the black carapace, and Polixis thought the saw was going to shatter. Suddenly, there was a sickening crunch. Polixis knew he had just heard Uxis's fused ribs caving in.
"Been wondering what makes you beaky so big and strong,"
Urgulk growled at Polixis, eyes on the apothecary, while his minion continued to crack the rib cavity open.
"And we reckon we's found what it is."
The Medicaid orc let out a yelp of satisfaction and dragged its saw back out of the Space Marine's torso, deactivating the tool as blood and viscera sprayed from it. It swapped it for a flat planing knife, not unlike the two long blades carried by Urgork. As the greenskin began to slice back the aggressor's flesh, it used wicked meat hooks to further widen the chest cavity incision. Polixis realized just what it was doing. It was carving out one of the Space Marine's twin hearts. The Medicae abandoned its blade when most of Uxis's chest had been reduced to raw, flensed muscle. The wound running along his breastbone was now gaping. The orc took up her smaller, hook-tipped knife, clumsily cuffing blood and spittle from its mouth as it crouched over the ultramarine. Polixis tried to put his mind elsewhere, to think about anything other than what was about to happen. Anything to take his mind off the fury that felt as though it were going to burst his own hearts and tear his muscles apart. The orc reached into the raw cavity with its knife and began to cut. It was not the sickening, straining work of the bone saw or the cruel slicing of the flensing blade. The little nicks were almost incongruous, but they were the most sacrilegious cuts of all. Eventually, warty tongue jutting from between its tusks in concentration, the greenskin plunged its grubby glove down into the incision. There was a squelching sound before it ripped its hand back out, holding something aloft.
"I got it, boss,"
it said excitedly to Urgork. The warlord held out his hand to receive his underling's trophy, before turning to Polixis and holding it up, the dripping, glistening mass of muscle and flesh that was Uxis's primary heart.
"I told you, Beaky, I knows a thing or two about you. We seen how hard you fight to get bits out of your boys when they gets chopped. I knows how much you gits in a white armour want them."
The orc held the torn heart close to Polixis's face, grinning, his yellow eyes full of madness.
"Don't know why you needs it so bad. Don't care, either. All that matters to me is that it matters to you. You know nothing,"
Polixis snarled.
"We's been watching you, lads,"
the warlord said, his eyes still on Polixis as he turned the grisly organ over in his palm. The Medicae's crude butchery had only removed part of it.
"Besides, you think you's the first Beaky I've had strapped up here? He wouldn't tell as much at first, but then we hooked old Sly Boy up to his brain. We can do the same to you, but for now, I just want you to know what I know, what I can do."
As the greenskin finished speaking, he clenched his fist. There was a wet squelch, and Urgork opened his hand once again to reveal the crushed remains of the heart spread against his palm.
"The Emperor is with me,"
Polixis began to say, seeking out the words of the rite of intonation, familiar to all Ultramarines apothecaries, in an effort to suppress his fury.
"He is around me and within me, in my words and in my heart, in my deeds and in my sinews."
"Angry git, aren't you?"
Urgork mocked, taking a step closer, so that the orc and the Primaris were only separated by a narrow, charged space.
"Once I gets you going anyway, it's good to see that sometimes. You and I, Beaky, we ain't so different."
"You are an abomination,"
Polixis spat.
"Big word,"
Urgork said, nodding slowly.
"Abomination! I knows it, though. I've heard it plenty of times before. Other big Yumi words, too. Monstrosity. Aberrance. I understands them, Beaky. It's 'cause I'm different from these other gits."
The beast paused to encompass the rest of the basilica and its greenskin occupiers, speaking as though none of them could hear him.
"I'm bigger and better than them, so they call me things. Even some of the lads used to say things. Freak, dead boy, stitchy skin. Then I crumped them, and they stopped saying those words. I'm bigger and I'm better, because I was made to be, and that's how we is the same, Beaky.
You are an insane Xenos monster. We have nothing in common.
You was made to be the best,
Urgul continued, as though Polixis hadn't spoken.
You was put together. You didn't grow like the lads or normal Yumis. You was designed, made to be a boss, like me. That's why I want you, Beaky. That's why you is here. Even more than the smaller Beaky boys. You was made to beat everyone else. I reckon the secret to that is here and here.
The orc pressed a claw against Polixus's breastplate, and then his throat, singling out his progenoids. The space marine shuddered with revulsion, turning his face away from the monster and its hideous gaze.
There is nothing the organs of the Adeptus Astartes can do to preserve your rotting flesh, he said. Cut apart all these bodies, do likewise to me, and you will still be beyond salvation. You were born a monster, and you will die one.
We'll see,
Urgork said slowly. Then, without warning, snatched Polixis by the jaw, yanking his head back round. He tried to resist, but, bound as he was, there was nothing he could do to fight the warlord's nightmarish strength. The orc forced a claw into his mouth, holding his jaw in a vice grip, threatening to crush bone and break his teeth. As Polixis struggled to draw breath while simultaneously biting down on the foul digit, Urgork gripped the torn remains of Uxis's heart in his other hand and rammed it against the Primaris's mouth. Polixis's eyes widened with horror as he realized what was happening. He tried to close his jaw, tried to spit out the alien's filthy fingers, tried to tear them off, but the stinking, unyielding grip of the brutish creature was irresistible. He tasted the coppery tang of blood, followed by a greasy, choking morass.
Gonna take your medicine, Beaky,
Urgork snarled, thick strings of drool dangling from his tusks, his butcher's breath engulfing the apothecary. The flesh of the heart made Polixis heave, but he could not halt its passage, couldn't stop the stifling, horrifying realization of what was happening. It slid thickly down his throat until it passed the point of no return. He found his breath and screamed with outrage, but it did no good. Urgork let go and stepped back, allowing Polixis's head to fall. The Primaris remained still, breathing heavily, his mouth full of a foul, greasy aftertaste, his gen-hanced body keeping him from retching.
Tastes good, don't it?
Urgork leered, gesturing for his Medicaid syringe as his body started shaking.
Plenty more where that came from?
Polixis threw his head back and roared. The sound, full of fury and despair, filled the basilica, reverberating from the vaults and cloisters, taking on a life of its own, until it sounded like 100 battle brothers, giving vent to a pain that was beyond words. Even the most raucous greenskins filling the nave and balconies were silenced by the terrible sound, and all stopped and stared at the captive Primaris, some fingering their weapons nervously, others casting glances at the pillars and annexes and the high ceiling, as though expecting to see a host of vengeful warriors materialize at the sound of their brother's agony. But none did. Polixis's cry trailed away to a long, low moan, and the sounds bouncing around the basilica faded, until there was nothing but silence. The Medicaid jabbed its syringe into Urgork's flank. The warlord grunted and went rigid, his eyes never leaving Polixis. The space marine looked up at the beast, held its gaze, his expression one of purest, most unadulterated hatred.
Cog Crusher,
Urgork said, as his medicines took effect once more.
Bring the doc here another body.
Castor. The commander's name was Davik. He was a Kelestani colonel, shaven-headed, short and stocky, like most stormers. At some point since the fall of Shabbat, he'd broken his arm. It was bound against his breast by a sling made from a torn-up Numerian camo cape. The injury made making the sign of the Aquila impossible, but he bowed his head reverentially to Castor as best he could.
"My apologies again, Lord," he said. "My men thought you were too large to be anything other than greenskins. The last thing we expected to find out here were the champions of Ultramar."
"In the future, be sure to run through proper target identification drills with your men, Colonel," Castor said.
The chaplain knew his chastening tone was perhaps unjust. They were a ragtag collection of guard outfits, Kelestani, Voitikans, Numerians, a few Faeburn. That their discipline was shaken could hardly be held against them. But Castor was still coming down from an unfulfilled combat high, and that made him acerbic at best. The urge to purge still sang through his veins, battered out by his slowly decelerating heartbeats. He focused his attention on the men before him. When the rock had come down, it had struck the southern end of Shabbat. The forces there had been decimated, but a few units holding the most southerly extent of the slums had avoided annihilation. A scattering of survivors had managed to retreat southwards into the mountains. Davik told the Primaris how he had initially been the second-ranking officer of the ragged group.
"There was a dispute with the Zoyshen colonel yesterday afternoon," Davik said. "He wanted to make a break eastwards for Imperial lines. He thought we could use the trucks we took in the first few ambushes. I told him the trucks would break down, and we'd find ourselves stranded out in the wastes and at the mercy of their damn air cover."
"How many men do you have remaining?" Severus asked the colonel.
He'd been interrogating Davik in the bottom of the gorge when Castor had joined them, absent initially, while he had been blessing the bodies of the three guardsmen killed during the ambush. The colonel glanced from the chaplain to the reaver, clearly uncertain about which of the two skull-faced giants held seniority. Eventually, he addressed Severus.
"Following the latest roll call, 68 combat effective, 11 wounded.
Do you count yourself among that last number, Colonel?"
"A las pistol only takes one hand, Lord."
Castor turned his gaze to the nearest guardsman as Davik spoke. A composite team in the mismatching gear of Voitikan and Numerian infantrymen were heaping the greenskins killed in the ambush, preparing the bodies for torching so as to destroy the spores given off by their corpses. A few kept casting worried glances towards the Primaris, as though afraid the hulking warriors were about to suddenly attack them. They were a weary, demoralized-looking band, caked in dust and dirt. It was not the attitude Castor would have expected from an outfit that had only just conducted a successful ambush against a superior force. Their morale was all but broken.
"This is the third column we've successfully destroyed," Davik was saying, tapping his boot against the thick tire of the orc truck beside him.
"And the third coming up from the south?" Severus asked.
"The south?" Davik asked,
a look of uncertainty crossing his stolid expression.
"These greenskins were coming through the southern passes, from the direction of Baspire?"
"No," Davik said. "No, they've all come from Shabbat. They were turning back. Look."
The colonel moved to the rear of the open truck and dragged away a stained covering. Immediately, the stink of opened innards and the buzzing of hungry, fat-bellied rotwings assailed Castor's auto-sensors. The back of the truck was heaped with the butchered remains of a brace of slope-tuskers and smaller, unidentifiable beasts, their blood congealed in long rivulets towards the trailer's edge.
"They weren't reinforcements," Davik said. "They were a foraging party. They've been coming up into the tombstones ever since they took Shabbat. There isn't enough food for them down there, at least not until their vile spores have taken root."
"Lieutenant Tyrannus must be informed of this," Castor said. "If we can confine the Xenos to the city, we may be able to starve them out." "I will send word to the lieutenant as soon as we are able to establish a connection," Severus said. "In the meantime, I am going to requisition one of these trucks along with its contents."
"Why?" Davik asked. "I was going to have them burned with their bodies."
"Not this one," Severus said, gesturing to the nearest truck with his long blade. "I have a use for it.
Bring me half a dozen Xenos corpses as well.
To his credit, Davik didn't hesitate, snapping a string of orders to his weary men. Castor could sense his desire to know more, though. As six greenskin bodies were hauled in front of Severus, the colonel spoke.
Lords, with all due respect, may I ask what it is you're doing out here? Are there more of you coming?
Castor looked to Severus, partly disapproving of the man's boldness, partly impressed by his bravery. The Reaver responded.
No. We are conducting a covert operation. We aim to infiltrate Shabbat.
Assassination? Davik wondered aloud. Sabotage?
It is not your place to ask us such things, Severus said. If you are as wise as you are courageous, Colonel, you will hold your tongue.
Of course. I would not presume to question the objectives of the Adeptus Astartes, my lord. But it would be remiss of me not to offer the services of myself and my men. If there is anything we can do to further your mission, just say the word.
Castor expected the usual cold rebuke from the Reaver. Instead, the skull-faced killer nodded.
There is, in fact, some assistance your men may be able to provide me with, Colonel. How much in the way of explosive material were you able to evacuate out of Shabbat?
Screw it. Mektrok's workshop seemed to be getting busier every night. The greenskin mechanic had secured the collapsed remnants of a manufactorum block on the south side of town the day the lads had stormed the Humi city. A new roof of scavenged corrugated iron had been installed, and the rubble had been heaped high enough to give some semblance of structure. Since then, the workshop's floor, cleared of debris by the efforts of Drok's gaggle of Gretchen slaves, had seen lots of fixing and tinkering, and played host to the wheels of over a dozen different speed mobs, all eager to get their battered war machines back into the fight as quickly as possible. Drok was certainly doing better business than either of his two biggest rivals, Mex Fixter and Grug. Cogcrusher himself would have been proud, or so Drok kept insisting. Screwit made an obscene gesture at the mech's back as he rifled through his gubbins, searching for a bigger spanner. The other grots around Screwit snickered with ill-concealed humour, clustered around the engine block of the truck they were supposed to be fixing. Drok spun at the sound, eyes blazing.
"Screw it, you little squig-munch!"
the orc bellowed, lunging for the Gretchen. Screwit yelped and flung himself over the engine, his scrawny frame narrowly avoiding his master's grasping claws. He stumbled down on the other side of the broken-down vehicle, intent on making a run for the workshop's open door. Scrag, of course, stuck a leg out in time to trip him. The Gretchen tumbled over his fellow oiler's limb, a flailing hand snagging Drok's work tarpaulin draped over the engine's flank and hauling a mound of the mech's tools down with him. Scrag's plot didn't go as planned. Most of the rusting pieces of equipment came down directly on top of him, knocking him unconscious. Screwit scrabbled through the dirt as the clang of falling metal resounded in his ears, expecting to feel Drok's claws closing around his skinny throat. They didn't. He realized that, far from the cackles of laughter and excitement that would usually fill the workshop when Drok attempted to snag one of his underlings, a hushed silence had fallen. He stayed on his stomach, hands clasped over his head, eyes screwed shut. Still, neither wrench nor fist fell. He opened one eye. Drok was standing over him, but the mech's eyes weren't on his wayward oiler. The scrap-armored greenskin was staring out of the warehouse entrance towards the foothills of the mountains that loomed over the ruined city. There, just beyond the edge of the broken slums, a great fireball was rising up out of the darkness, its thunderclap detonation, initially masked by the clatter of falling tools, rolling back from the dry, dead hills.
"What the?"
Drok began to say, but a further burst of light out in the darkness stopped him. Flashes of colour darted through the night, dozens of little traces quickly swallowed up by the blackness. They were describing a pattern down the hillside towards the city's edge. Another explosion burst into life, nearer this time, its report sounding clear across the ruins away to the edge of the rock's crater. Bellows filled the night as the greenskins nesting in the southern slums began to react to the unexpected activity.
"Humies!"
shouted Krunk, the boss of the truck currently being tinkered with in Drock's workshop. The knob waved his axe in the direction of the light show, which appeared to be steadily descending towards the city.
"Let's go, lads! Scabbrot, shut up shop!"
Drock bellowed to his apprentice welder as he snatched up his custom blaster. He jogged out into the night, Screwit's antics apparently forgotten, the grots scrambling to follow him. Screwit managed to get to his feet in time to join them, aiming a vicious kick at the still unconscious Scrag as he went. Outside, the night had descended into chaos. Boys were scrambling in from all sides, hefting choppers and blazing indiscriminately into the darkness with their shooters. Most were headed for the city's outskirts, towards the bolts of light that Screwit now recognized as belonging to the Humies' pew guns. The Gretchen, attending the mobs, knew better than to try to follow their masters. Whatever was going on, it wasn't worth a trampling. Instead, they scampered to the tops of the biggest rubble heaps they could find, craning for a better look at the excitement that was waking up the city. Screwit hiked up his breeches and scrambled to keep up, mounting the rubble of the nearest Hablock's remains, arm over arm. He used his elbows to force his way close to the highest point. Only Fat Chopper and Drock's chief bootlicker, Wrench, remained above him. The perch afforded them a view of the city's southern limits and the column approaching from out of the darkness. It was one of the food-grubbing mobs sent up into the hills by the big boss to get more scran for the lads. Screwit recognized the headlights bobbing through the dark, winding a precious route down into the slum ruins. It was obvious, however, that not all the approaching trucks belonged to the grubbers and scran lads anymore. Bolts of light were spraying from the rear of the three speeding transports, shooting towards the two trucks in front, and as they drew nearer, the roar of engines and the crack of gunfire became audible.
"What's going on?"
demanded one of the grots further down the rubble heap, unable to get a good view of the rapidly approaching action. Wrench, eager as ever to be the centre of attention, began to provide a commentary.
"Looks like some Humies have jumped a scran lad somewhere in the foothills, got hold of one of the mob's trucks, and now they is chasing the other two with it."
"One truck of Humies is chasing two trucks of the lads?"
another Gretchen demanded incredulously. Wrench's angry retort was cut out by another explosion, bursting into fiery existence just to the left of one of the fleeing trucks. It looked as though the Humies were lobbing bombs, too.
"They's getting right cramped,"
Chopper squealed excitedly, pointing a claw at the mobs now mobilizing out into the slums. Dozens of trucks and war buggies roared through the rubble, headlights playing over the ruins as they bounced along, greenskins holding on to every surface while bellowing and blazing away with their sidearms. The two scran trucks fleeing from the hills were only a few hundred yards from the safety of the orcs rushing to meet them, searing bolts of energy continuing to perforate the air around them as the Humies kept up their pursuit. As the distance closed, some of the hijackers switched to targeting the oncoming mobs, their energy bolts splitting out to lance buggies and open-topped war tracks. Return fire lit up the night, blazing away inaccurately in all directions.
"They're gonna hit,"
Wrench said excitedly. Screwit craned his neck as the Gretchen around and below him jostled for a better view of the unfolding drama. The two trucks, fleeing from the Humies, shot past the lead vehicles of their rescuers, bouncing along the debris-clogged remnants of the city's streets, while behind, the Humie truck came up short. It took a hard right and, to loud jeers, began to race back towards the looming darkness of the tombstones. The dozens of rickety greenskin vehicles tearing towards them accelerated, their occupants furious that the Humies would consider offering a scrap only to turn tail at the last moment. Chopper grunted, cuffing a smaller Gretchen beneath him around the back of the head.
"The big uns need a scrap, else they'll take it out on us when they gets back."
There was a chorus of groans from the assembled grots as they contemplated orcs left without anything to crump. Screwit was too busy watching the approaching trucks to join in. The two that had come down from the hills hadn't turned at bay when they'd reached the rest of the lads, but had instead carried on into the city, thundering past the mound of rubble being used by the Gretchen. It looked like they'd been hit hard by the Humies. Only two boys were left, one at the steering wheel of each of the vehicles, wrapped up good in the ragged capes and goggles the speed boys used when they were out in the ash wastes. Screwit was only afforded a split-second view as the trucks thundered past, kicking out dirt and rubble from their heavy tires. And then they were gone, careering deeper into the ruined city's heart. The rest of the Gretchen were still watching the ongoing pursuit as the Humies fled back up the hillside and into the darkness. Shots pursued them, and another explosion rocked the night air, catching one of the trucks that had been gaining on the Humies. It tipped it over in a gout of flames, sending it crashing into a war truck that had been pulling up alongside and immolating them both. The Grots let out a loud gasp, followed by a few cheers, as the pyrotechnics continued, touching off another buggy and sending flames licking along the hillside. Despite all the excitement, it looked as though the Humies were getting away.
"You got lucky,"
Screwit heard Wrench saying as he dropped down from the rubble pile.
"Boss Drock was gonna crump you good before all this kicked off. Screwit!"
Screwit didn't respond. He'd noticed something that wasn't right at all. Something that was just beginning to be snooped on. Before the other Gretchen had realized that he was gone, he was heading into the darkness of the city's ruins, in the wake of the two Scran wagons. Grotsnog. Something was happening further south, out in the slums and along the hillsides. Nob Grotsnog had been roused from his sleep beneath the squighide covering that his mob had draped over the ruined alleyway, jerked away by the excited bickering of a gang of nearby Gretchen.
"What's happening?"
he demanded groggily as he rolled out from beneath the hide, scrabbling for his axe. Grolk, the mob's big shooter, was stumbling back down from the nearest mound of rubble, his hulking weapon strapped across his back.
"Humies!"
he bellowed as he came, rousing more of the boys scattered along the alleyway. Most of the mob were out scrapping with Morgarth's lads, angry that their rivals had got closer to the Humie positions on the ridgeline the day before. Those who remained behind were half intoxicated with fungal beer, but the promise of a real fight got them awake and alert quickly enough.
"What's going on?"
Grotsnog demanded once more, half-snatching, half-catching Grolk as he tumbled down the last few feet of rubble and into the alleyway.
"Humies chasing the Scran lads,"
the big shooter boy panted, pointing a claw southwards.
"Back down from the hills. All the boys down that way is headed out to crump 'em." "Gork's droppings," Grotsnog snapped.
He could hear the commotion further south, bellowing, the roar of engines and the clatter of gunfire. There were already dozens of mobs, most of them bigger or faster, between them and the south side of the city. Grotsnog had been inordinately pleased with himself when he'd managed to claim the alley close to the big spiky Humie building for his lads early in the occupation, but having a base of operations near the ruined city's heart suddenly didn't seem so smart. Being far from the edges meant far from the fight.
"Don't just stand there,"
the knob bellowed at those around him.
"Get slogging!"
"What about the other lads?"
Dunf demanded.
"It's their loss,"
Grotsnog said, shoving Dunf towards the end of the alleyway.
"Now, move it!"
The assorted mob didn't get far, no more than a dozen paces. The mounting howl of an abused engine and the squeal of tyres, followed by the shriek of poorly applied brakes, heralded the arrival of a truck careering around the remains of a tumbled-down refinery smokestack. The vehicle made straight for the semi-clear space of the alleyway, forcing Grotsnog and his lads to throw themselves against the rubble on either side to avoid getting flattened by the oncoming truck. Grotsnog's angry protestations were lost in the shriek of a second vehicle as it came screeching around the corner to join the first, black smoke billowing from its exhaust vents.
"Watch where you's driving!"
Grotsnog bellowed, banging the flat of his axe head against the nearest truck's runners as it finally came to a halt beside him. The git driving it was alone, wrapped up good in a scabby dune cape and goggles. Grotsnog recognized the paint job on the truck as belonging to one of the Scran mobs that had been sent up into the hills to help supplement the diet of the hundreds of mobs now assembling in the city.
"Oi, you see the Humies while you was up there?"
he demanded. The driver didn't seem to have heard him, exiting from the other side of the truck's drive compartment. Urzog, on the opposite side of the truck from Grotsnog, made to get out of the big greenskin's way, but tripped and stumbled against the vehicle's chassis. It was only as he hit the dirt that Grotsnog's sluggish brain registered that there was something very, very wrong about the Scran boys. They were big, bigger even than Grotsnog, and none of the lads who'd gone up into the hills had been particularly fine examples of orc might. Even as he realized the disparity, he also realized that blood was jetting from Urzog's severed throat. He hadn't tripped at all. He began to bellow incoherently, reaching for his slugger, at the same time as Dumpf dragged back one of the coverings protecting the slaughtered beasts heaped in the back of the first truck. Even as he did so, a body rose up from the bloody remains, its heavy armour smeared with viscera, a mace in one fist lashing out to crack the greenskin's skull open. Grotsnog opened fire. The shattered alleyway resounded with the bark of his pistol, shots spraying inaccurately into the rubble, while around him everything descended into chaos. Grok, slower on the uptake, was struggling to bring his big shooter to bear on the thing that had been driving the first truck. It leapt from the open drive seat straight over the vehicle's bonnet, hideously fast for something so large, a long blade sliding from its ragged cape. Grotsnog was only barely aware of a decapitating blow taking Grog's head off. He managed just 5 shots before more wicked silver flashed in the firelit darkness. It took him a few seconds to realize why his slugger wasn't firing anymore. By the time it accepted the fact that his severed arm was lying at his feet, fist still clenched around his pistol's grip, a second blow had laid his throat open to the bone. The remains of the mob died quickly, their bellows cut short, their inaccurate gunfire eliminated. Silence fell over the alleyway, sinister and surreal amid the uproarious city. Grotsnog tried to get up, tried to fight, but all he could do was keep his hands clamped around his open throat as he bled to death. He was half aware of one of the murderous giants quickly shattering the headlights of both trucks, bringing darkness to the scene, as the two drivers tugged away their capes and goggles, revealing blue armour and leering skull masks.
"The bodies?" one asked.
"No time," the other replied. "Move."
Castor. The Primaris advanced to the head of the alleyway, low and fast.
"Stay close,"
Severus ordered Castor over the vox. He did so, trying to quell the natural dislike he felt towards infiltration techniques. It had been difficult enough out in the tombstones, surrounded by nothing but the soaring vastness of the mountains. But now that he was in the midst of a city overrun by Xenos scum, the urge to carry righteous death to them was almost overwhelming. He overcame his urges by fixing his mind on the Lectato and its codex-led teachings about the importance of flexibility and adaptability in all of war's many aspects. He was a battle chaplain, not a blind zealot. He had already managed to countenance concealing himself amidst the rancid meat collected by the greenskins in the back of their rickety wagons. Doing so had been a necessary evil, part of Severus's bold plan to infiltrate Shebat under the cover of a distraction led by Colonel Davik. Castor had no idea whether the guardsman in the third commandeer truck had managed to break away from the greenskin pursuit and make it back to the foothills before being caught. Concealed in the wagon's rear, he'd been blind until an orc had pulled back the covering and felt the sudden heat of his wrath.
"There are more contacts closing from the north and northeast," Strix said, consulting the bulky Orspex primary as they came to the end of the alley.
The other two reavers were crouched behind him, knives sheathed, the crude disguises that had allowed them to race through the orc lines cast off.
"Do they approach with purpose?" Severus demanded.
"No, but they will likely stumble across this location in a matter of minutes."
"And has the device concluded its subterranean scans?"
"Yes, Sergeant. The original locator beacon is correct."
Strix pointed with his own blade beyond the end of the alley, towards the street the trucks had come down.
"Take point," Severus ordered.
They hadn't got far before Castor's visor pinged with a lit-up transmission sigil.
"Vox contact," he said. "We're back in signal range."
"Still no fix, though," Severus replied. "It will take longer for a proper connection to become established. We carry on."
The reavers and the chaplain moved out into the street. The darkness surrounding them was riven with the howling of greenskin mobs and the battering reports of their crude firearms, flares of light illuminating the rubble that towered all around, like the great dark barrows of long-dead warrior kings. It seemed that Davik's gambit had been too successful. It felt as though the entire city were awake, the initial disruption spreading from mob to mob all the way to Shebat's heart. They reached the exfiltration point without meeting opposition. It was a sub-street storage hangar, marked out on the powerful Auspex array carried by Strix as having survived the rock's impact. The tremors caused by the collision had not only brought down almost the entirety of the city, it had also split and ruptured Shebat Alpha's underworld, subsurface storage bays, the sewer system, basements, and the subway maglev had all been broken and reformed, and while most of the tunnels had simply collapsed in their entirety, some had remained open. The scans picked up by the Auspex were incomplete, but they offered the best hope of navigating below ground, away from the mobs infesting the surface ruins. Task Force Marilis descended, moving aside the girders and rubble to expose the hangar's entrance. It had once been a vast storage space for a printing business, and its survival was a curious juxtaposition to the devastation of the workshop it had once serviced. Though the lumens had failed, the wide room below remained in an orderly state, packed with sealed plastic containers. A door led to a service corridor, rusting and abandoned, which carried on through to a half-collapsed smelting pit.
"What's the likelihood of the Xenos pursuing us down there?" Castor asked. "There is no evidence that they have accessed the underground," Severus replied. "That may change as we move deeper into the city, but for now it offers us the best chance of avoiding detection and allows us to scan for the largest concentrations of Xenos without putting ourselves at risk. Wherever they are, that is almost certainly where we will find Helix."
There were two possible routes beyond the smelter pit. One was from a section of the maglev line that had collapsed in on itself, providing access from the adjacent rooms and basements. The other was a waste chute that led to the sewage systems. According to the readings on the Auspex, it was still open at the far end.
"Phobos, take the subway line," Severus ordered. "Strix, the chute. Reconnaissance pattern. Maintain Vox contact if possible. Report back here within the hour. Synchronize your chrono countdown." "I can accompany one of them," Castor said. "No need," Severus responded brusquely. "We have to find our bearings and establish just how accurate these readings are before moving any further. They don't need your help to do that." "So what will I do instead?" "You will do the same thing as me, Brother Chaplain. You will review the tactical log and mission briefings, and you will wait."
Polixis. The heart had choked his throat. It had made him gag and retch. But the memories were worse. The memories choked his mind. They came on, unbidden, as Polixis remained bound to the rack, a sudden flood stifling in their clarity and overwhelming in their intensity. He was going to die. They all were. Still, on they fought. Uxis's flamestorm gauntlets had nearly bled dry, the Promethean wells stuttering as what had once been twin spears of flame were reduced to flaring bursts. It hardly seemed to matter anymore. Everything around him was a sheet of fire, aliens stumbling and writhing about, blinded by ash and smoke, burning alive in the fury of the Fulminata unleashed. It was like a scene from one of Chaplain Castor's sermons, the coming of the Emperor's righteous judgment, when the heretic and the Xenos would be purged by unending, divine fire. Uxis only wished he had more to give. He slammed his ignited fists forwards, pulverizing an orc's torso as it came charging through the fires, ignited from head to foot. Tyro and Tor were both dead, their gravis plate hacked open, half buried by a mound of orc corpses. Ancient Skyrus had fallen too, still holding his standard aloft, even in death. Extremis was immobilized, one side of its gravlift wrecked by the endless barrage of greenskin rockets and stick grenades. Only Uxis and Captain Demeter still fought. A huge brute of a greenskin hammered two long blades time and again against the captain's gravis armor as Demeter battled to protect the standard of the Fulminata. Uxis was trying to reach the captain's side, but the big orc's kindred were swarming him. Another leapt at the sole surviving aggressor, clutching at him, trying to wrestle him to the ground with a terrible strength. His heavy gauntlet pulverized the skull of another, even as it drove a two-handed chainblade into his midriff. Pain surged as the roaring blades bit deep. A backhand swipe of his gauntlet smashed the orc's head from its shoulders, but it was too late. Another was digging a knife through the armor joints beneath his backpack. He felt his legs growing weak as his Belisarian furnace kicked in, demanding one last bout of slaughter in the name of the chapter and the Primarch. He crushed skulls and broke bones, choking on his own blood, given over to mindless fury now as he sought to kill as many Xenos as he could before they took him. Beyond, he was vaguely aware of the captain. The orc he was fighting had cleaved away one arm with a huge swing of one of its blades, and now it was bellowing with laughter as it stepped away from the crackling arcs of Demeter's Boltstorm gauntlet. It was toying with him. The realization sent a fresh surge of hate jolting through Uxis. He tried once more to reach the captain, but something hammered into his flank, causing him to stumble. A squig had leapt clear through the flames and was now clamping its huge slavering jaws around his right arm, sawing its teeth through ceramite and plasteel. He smashed his other fist into it, causing it to burst in a huge wave of stinking gore and meat, but the effort of the blow forced him to his knees. He could feel his strength ebbing, the pain from his wounds too much to ignore any more. Demeter had fallen as well, his armor buckled in half a dozen places. Uxis saw him framed against the blue and white of the Fulminata's standard, the beastly alien warlord looming over him, burning bodies heaped all about. The captain's blood-splattered white helm turned, and Uxis realized they were looking at each other. Demeter's voice clicked over the vox, somehow still so calm, even at the end.
"Courage and honor, brother Uxis." Then the green tide fell upon them both, and they were gone.
As suddenly as the vision appeared, it shattered. Polixis's eyes focused again and his breathing returned. The dead lay before Polixis, silent, the judgment of their glassy helmet lenses damning.
"Where were you, brother apothecary? Where were you when we gave our lives that others might live?"
Polixis had seen it. In a half-sleep, he had seen Uxis's final moments, and alongside him, those of Captain Demeter. His omophagia, the eighth organ implanted in all space marines, had made sure he was not spared his brother's dying moments. Normally, the implant allowed an Adeptus Astartes to gain a degree of recollection by consuming the flesh of another. Polixis had never heard of it occurring, thanks to the forced consumption of gene seed before. It only added to the horror, choking Polixis as surely as the gland had itself, cold and clammy, like Uxis's death grip from beyond the grave. In the longest, darkest hours of the night, Polixis realized that what little emotions he possessed had been bled dry. The calculating part of his mind told him as much, continuing to narrate his situation in its surgical tone, removed from the reality of his predicament. That reality, he now understood, was that the meaning of his existence had been reduced to nothingness. He had sundered his sacred duty to his chapter and the Imperium. He had failed to protect the lives, bodies, and war gear of those in his charge. Worse than that, he had disgraced them, dishonored them with abject defeat. He was trapped, his soul bound forever to the oblivion of regret, locked in the darkness of a body unable to so much as move a single arm. He would die here, he had no doubt. It would be slow, probably butchery. That knowledge did not concern him. His life was forfeit regardless. He had no means to resist his fate, and thus all other considerations became academical. And then, abruptly, the situation changed. He heard a faint metallic groan. It took a second to draw his thoughts up out of the despair that had nearly drowned them. He realized that his whole body had been tense for hours, and that both his arms were now actively pressing against the metal bent crudely round his wrists. That meant the servos were responding. His thoughts quickened. The shame remained, but now there was something more, something that had deserted him as night had fallen and shadows had wrapped up the bodies at his feet. anger. The urge to immediately rip himself free from the rack and set about the greenskin slumbering around him was almost overwhelming. He forced himself to steady his breathing and slow his heart rate. He had to test his systems. The majority of his armor could still be incapacitated. He relaxed both arms and tried to slowly raise one foot. As he had feared, the servos in both legs were still unresponsive. His armor was gradually recharging after the ministrations of the Xenos prong. It had been days since he had last been struck by it. In that time, he realized his battle plate had been returning itself to full functionality. If he could avoid another shock, he might eventually be capable of full movement. A grunt nearby made him go still, worried that his sudden degree of freedom had been spotted. There was a thud of boots on flagstones, a few snarled words in the darkness. He moved his head slightly, eyes adjusting to pick out several figures on the steps leading to the apse. One was an orc, and it was holding a squirming Gretchen by the scruff of its neck. They had disturbed one of Polixis's captors, who now seemed to be demanding some sort of explanation from them. Their tongue was too guttural for him to make out, but judging by the pointing and the Gretchen's high-pitched squealing, it seemed like they were reporting something that had occurred out in the city. The orc turned and kicked two of its sleeping underlings awake, barking orders and gesticulating at their weapons. Other orcs around them stirred drowsily, disturbed by the sudden commotion. The beast snatched the two it had woken and thrust them down the apse, sending them after the first greenskin and his Gretchen towards the basilica's doors. It made to follow, but paused, glancing back at Polixis. He stayed perfectly still, watching the greenskin, wondering how much it could discern in the darkness. After a while, it grunted and turned away, hastening after its kin. Something was happening out in Shabbat. Polixis didn't intend to remain in the basilica long enough to find out what. Grimtooth. Grimtooth had told the git he'd let the big boss skin him alive if he was lying. They'd come in the middle of the night, some zogger from Zagby's mob, hauling along a Gretchen he'd snatched from Mech Drog. Grimtooth had almost cracked him on the jaw for waking him, but the boy's story had eventually penetrated the angry fug of the commando's tiredness. There were Humies in the south of the city. According to the Grot's excited, stammering report, some scran wagons had been snatched by some gits hiding up in the mountains. They chased the rest of the scran lads back to the edge of town before turning and legging it. That in itself was only moderately interesting, but Grimtooth had managed to restrain himself long enough for the story to start getting better. The Grot claimed that there had only been a few boys in the escaped scran wagons, and they'd been wrapped up tight. They'd not stopped when they reached the city, but kept going, on past the mobs rushing after the Humies. Then Zagby's mob had stumbled across a bunch of bodies. The greenskin seemed vague on the number, probably due to his inability to count, all from Grotsnog's mob, including the deviant Nob himself. According to Zagby's lad, they'd been
cut up real good.
Even more importantly, they'd been littered around the two scran trucks, now abandoned. All told, it constituted what Stabskar would have called a
situation.
Grimtooth had kicked Krulkill and Ergin awake and told them to follow. Both had known better than to complain. The commandos trailed Zagby's lad and the Grot out into the city. The Git wasn't lying about one thing at least. Something had certainly stirred up Shabbat's new greenskin inhabitants. The mobs occupying the square beyond the spiky building's doors were rousing, arguing and scrapping among themselves as distant bellows and gunfire resounded through the night. Grimtooth shoved his way through the press, the sight of his cape cowing any protest. They'd all heard about Stabskar's skinning and how Grimtooth had succeeded where the previous Nob had failed. Now his boys guarded the beaky prisoner beneath the very eyes of the big boss. Despite the prestige being close to Urgork brought with it, Grimtooth realized that it felt good to be back out again. For all the idea that the commandos were a cut above the footslogger mobs, boys would be boys. They hadn't had a proper scrap for days, kept in while other lads had attacked the Humie ridgeline over and over. The boys were getting fractious, and Grimtooth could threaten to crump them only so many times. Word about the mysterious trucks and Grotsnog's corpses was just what they needed, It had set the Commando Nob's instincts on edge. There was a hunt in the offing, and he wanted to get stuck right in. The guides led them through Shabbat's night-shrouded ruins, south towards the city limits. In the remnants of a dark alleyway, they came across the rest of Zagby's mob. They were gathered around two idling trucks, grunting and restless, clearly eager to fully claim the abandoned vehicles for themselves and roar south towards all the commotion.
"Definitely screen wagons," Grimtooth said, as he surveyed the bloody contents in the open rear of both trucks, using a torch carried by one of Zagby's lads. He turned to the bodies of Grotsnog and his boys, scattered around the vehicles.
"They ain't being touched,"
Zagby promised. Grimtooth grunted, not believing for a second that the mob hadn't already pillaged the corpses. He picked his way from one to another, turning them over with his boot. Their wounds were all clear and sharp, made by long blades and a great deal of strength. All except one. One of the boys had received a crushing blow to its skull, staving it in and leaving the orc lifeless against the wheel of one of the trucks. Just as he was about to move on to the next body, he noticed something abandoned beside the truck's tire. He sniffed and picked it up, turning it over in his hands. It was a ragged cape, like the ones used by the footsloggers out in the ash wastes or up in the high hills. There was blood on it, crusted and dark.
"You've seen this before?"
he demanded, holding the threadbare cloth up in front of Drock's grot.
"Yeah, boss,"
the ranty thing squeaked.
"Seen them scram boys wearing them. Them's what the drivers had on."
Grimtooth held the rags close to his face, hawked and spat, then inhaled deeply. There was no mistaking it. He turned to Zagby, baring his tusks in a wicked grin.
"Send your boys out, all the nearest mobs. Get them here right now, and tell them to keep a sharp eye. There's beaky boys around, and we is gonna find them."